John Wick game coming to the Epic Games Store, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe button so that you can be notified, and hold off on that like button until you get a portion of this show that you actually like, then feel free to like and leave a comment. Now, coming up on today's show, obviously we'll be looking at the feature story, which is the John Wick Hex game coming to a bunch of consoles and PC, but exclusive to the Epic Games Store. We'll also be taking a look at, in tech news, comparing the Microsoft Edge browser for Mac versus Safari, Chrome, and Firefox. We'll also be looking at a bill that was recently introduced in the Senate that might ban loot boxes and pay-to-win mechanics. I see that it's finally hopped across the pond. We'll also be taking a look at the iPhone update that could change the way you text forever with a new swipe keyboard. And in gadget news, we'll be looking at Epson's $500 smart glasses powered by your phone. And we'll also be looking at Amazon's latest Blink security camera that lasts 2 years on AA batteries. And finally, in gaming news, we'll be looking at the Destiny 2 exotic quest to bring back one of the best guns from Destiny 1. So, all that and more coming up. But did you know that Wi-Fi was invented by accident? And there's actually a story that goes along with it, so let me pull that up here for you guys. An Australian scientist by the name of John O'Sullivan was inspired by Stephen Hawking's theory of evaporating black holes and their subsequent radio waves and set about to find them and prove the theory correct. Whilst doing so, he found that those weak signals were hard to distinguish from the louder background radio noise of the entire universe. These signals had traveled such vast distances and were so small and distorted by the gas and dust of space that they had passed through, and this meant that their waveform had altered from a sharp and easily identifiable spike to a flattened curve. It was because of this that O'Sullivan and his researcher contemporaries got to work on creating a tool that could identify and filter specific radio waves. After a lot of hard work, he was eventually able to figure out a tool and base it off of a formula. However, they were unsuccessful in finding a black hole's radio waves. Fast forward to 1992, O'Sullivan was working for the CSIRO and was tasked with finding a way for computers to communicate without wires, a wireless system of some type. And remembering his previous research into black holes and the tools he'd created to identify the black hole radio waves wirelessly, O'Sullivan went back to that tool he previously made, and then using that mathematical formula and tweak it, using it as a basis for Wi-Fi to search out weak and fuzzy radio signals. He then, well, stumbled across Wi-Fi, and the internet became wireless. Well, at least after more investment of money and R&D and a bunch of other stuff, that's what happened. So, in case you didn't know that interesting tidbit, now you know, and now you can tell your friend, hey, I'm smarter than you. Wi-Fi was made by accident. And tell him why. Because you're cool like that. So, moving on. Alright, we've reached the segment in the show where today in tech history came about because, well, what really happened in history that kind of made us understand how the world works and what we're doing today based off of that knowledge? Well, being that today is May 8th, 2019, on this day in history, in 1886, German scientist Dr. Karl Gassner is issued a German patent for the first dry cell battery, which uses zinc as its primary component. A U.S. patent will be issued to Gassner in 1887. His battery is much like today's carbon-zinc general-purpose batteries, although most people use alkalines. And, well, that's how they got the dry cell battery up and off the ground and running. Also, on this day in history, in 1995, newspapers form New Century Network. The New York Times announced it would join eight other newspaper publishers in a new Century Network, with the goal of linking local online news services into a national network on the World Wide Web. The popularity of online news has grown along with the web itself. Now, the New York Times and many other newspapers publish their entire content online every day, including ours, even though we don't identify as a newspaper publisher and we've never had an actual physical newspaper, nor do we plan to ever, maybe, well, not in newsprint format, at least, because let's face it, save a tree, look at it on your phone. So, with that out of the way, let's head on over to today's tech news. First up today, John Wick game has been confirmed, a PC edition exclusive to the Epic Games Store. So, Thomas Was Alone and Volume developer Mike Bitho has announced his studio's next game, and it's a fast-paced, action-oriented strategy game based on the John Wick movie series. Now, John Wick Hex, the game name, is coming to unspecified consoles as well as PC, and it'll be exclusive to the Epic Games Store on PC and Mac at launch. Now, I know what you're going to say, "Ugh, Epic Games, why do you have to have all these exclusives?" Do you guys really not look that far back in history? Look at earlier last year, Spider-Man. The Spider-Man game? PS4. Exclusive. Halo? That was an Xbox. Exclusive. These exclusive things and deals and stories and videos and movies and TV shows and has been happening for eons at this point. I'm surprised you finally figured that out. How would one think to garner more attention within said company by releasing an exclusive to kind of, I don't know, get the base all fired up and excited and attract outside attention to come in to the... Okay. Basic economics are lost on you if you don't understand it at this point, but this John Wick Hex game is described as fight choreographed chess brought to life as a video game. The game, which was developed in cooperation with the minds behind the film series, aims to capture the series' signature gun-fu style while expanding its story universe. And here is more from the game's official description. Players must choose every action and attack they make while considering their immediate cost and consequences. Every move in John Wick Hex feels like a scene from the movies, and every fight contributes to your progress on the job and requires precise, strategic thinking. So if you're of that mindset and that brain and those kind of games really appeal to you, could be a good match. Hex features an original story separate from the film series. As players progress, they will unlock more weapons, as well as new suits for John Wick, and more locations to explore. Regarding the gunplay, a press release mentions that players will need to strategically consider the weapon they use for the specific battle in front of them. Not only that, ammo is finite and realistically simulated, so time your reloads and make the most of weapons you scavenge on the job, the developers say. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Hitman, except, well, here's the funny thing with Hitman, with bald barcode head dude, is he could hide behind stuff and then pop out and punch people. He didn't need a gun to do it. Although I really never got into the game much more than that, and not really much more than watching the video game Donkey videos on it, so I'm probably biased in not knowing anything about Hitman, but it kind of feels similar that way, and in also similar ways of Bloodborne, which is if you die, you die, and Dark Souls, if you die, you die. There are no respawns or reboot points. You start all the way back at the beginning of the game. I actually found it fascinating. I think I might have covered this. One specific game where you buy it and you have one life and that's it. And if you die, that's it. You're done. Game over. You don't get no reboot, no retry, no do-overs. One life. That's it. So really interesting. So regarding the art style, Hex aims to offer a unique graphic noir art design. The game also features the voice of John Wick actors Ian McShane and Lance Reddick. More cast members will be announced later. It's unclear if Keanu Reeves will be involved as well. So, I guess there's a announcement trailer embedded above to see gameplay and more. No release date was announced. The announcement of Hex comes just days before the third John Wick movie comes to theaters on May 15th. Now, this is not the first John Wick game as a VR game. John Wick Chronicles was released last year. It also doesn't mark the only expansion of the universe, as we know a John Wick TV series is in the works, with Reeves on board as executive producer. So if you guys are all excited about John Wick and wanting to play a game with the same style and feel, this game might actually whet your appetite, and you might actually enjoy it thoroughly. I don't know. Let me know down in the comments section if this is a game you're looking forward to or not. And if it's not, tell me what games you are looking forward to. And by the way, if you're curious, the articles that we mentioned in today's show can be found at technewsgadget.net/112112. And consider hitting that subscribe button if you haven't already. Oh, and ring that bell, because apparently subscriptions don't mean much. All right. In some tech news today, I guess, we got to take a look at the Microsoft Edge browser for Mac, and we're already comparing it to Apple's Safari, Google's Chrome, and Mozilla's Firefox, just to see how they stack up right now. So, you can download and run the web browser Microsoft Edge on your Mac, albeit it is in developer test versions that hasn't been granted an official beta test yet, so keep in mind, if it breaks, it breaks, and it's beta, and it's not even an official one at that, so good luck. But it's a remarkably, surprisingly solid app, even in pre-launch edition. Even that, we already know, is missing a couple of key features. You can get a feel for whether Microsoft Edge is worth replacing Safari as your main browser. Now, I know what you're going to say right now. You just talked all about Microsoft Edge and basically kicked it to the curb. Yeah. Well, let's read more of the article, shall we? A key reason that this early version is so robust, though, is the same reason that Microsoft has made this move at all. The company didn't set out to make a Mac browser, it set out to convert its existing PC Edge into using Google's Chromium system. That it gets a solid base also happens to give it a Mac version as well. And it's what makes the Mac version of Microsoft Edge look very much like the Mac version of Chrome. So if you're thinking of moving from Safari and didn't want to risk a pre-beta developer version of Microsoft Edge, you can download Chrome and you basically get the same feel here. So in terms of specs, well, it's so unfinished Edge is so far. You can make some broad comparisons that are kind of interesting. For a browser that looks like Chrome, for instance, Microsoft Edge currently takes up around a third less disk space than Google's offers. But then if you're tight on space, here's a funny thing. Safari is a head scratching, is that really right? 10 times smaller than the Edge. So you're like, well, Safari is also less CPU intensive than either the currently shipping Chrome or this developer Edge version. Now, we all tend to describe our preferred browser, and I'm sure you have yours, whichever one that is, as feeling light, responsive, and fast compared to the others. Now, the key word there, though, is feeling. If you're checking out Activity Monitor while running these browsers, or if you're on a MacBook with little space, you'd unquestionably say that Safari was the lightest, and if that's how it feels to you. You're supposed to say that, well, Edge is the fastest, because it's supposed to be. Well, that's the key promise from its Windows version, that Edge will be faster than any of them, but so far we're not really seeing that. There's no complaints about how quickly it loads any website they've tried with it, but they haven't been knocked out either. That speed, along with the final disk space requirement, is something we'll have to come back to when it ships. There's a good reason to hope that the final release will be quicker, but there's also a reason to expect it will be bigger, too, because this version of Edge is missing out on a couple of features. So, what's missing? Well, nothing really that you actually need in a browser, and nothing that isn't working. What's missing are some extra features, but these could be what make you decide to move to Edge. Arguably, the most appealing is a feature called Collections, which helps you save and organize material that you find on the web. It's going to be like Safari's reading list, but rather than bookmarking it, it'll be a research tool. You'll be able to drag images and text into it and then share some or all with others. Less thrilling, but possibly needed for people in corporations, is IE mode. This will be the whole horrible, long-forgotten Internet Explorer built into Edge so that, guess if you need it, you can use in-house sites that require the old standard. So, it goes into a little bit more explanations of it, but I think the core of this article really gets down to the feel of it. What do you feel you enjoy currently about your current browser? Sure, it's light, it's fast, it's responsive, but does it have the features that you want in it? Is it quick? Does it not bog down your computer? Can you open multiple tabs or do the tasks that you want to do and feel connected to the internet or on the internet and have the features that you need, whether that's bookmarking or social aspects of it? I don't know. Let me know your thoughts. This is a very interesting idea when it comes to browsers. I initially started out with, goodness, Internet Explorer, because I was on a PC and I was an idiot, and Internet Explorer went out of style for me really quick, and I became Microsoft or Firefox for the longest time. But after I started opening so many more browsers and having many browsers open on a regular basis, browser windows or tabs, I mean, Firefox started getting bogged down really quick. So once it started crippling my computer's processing system and powers, not to mention even if I did upgrade my computer, I made the switch to Chrome. And Chrome gave me the features that I needed, which were multiple tabs open all the time because I'm stupid and I like to have like 20 tabs open on my computer. Don't judge, okay? I know you do too. Heck, I'm, even on my iPhone, I have like 7 or 8 tabs open in Chrome. They're the app that I use on my phone. So it's a case to be made. For me, Chrome works out well because of everything I need open, everything I need to look at, everything I need to swap in between and have running in the background. It syncs perfectly with that. Do I need the bookmarks bar? Kinda, sorta. Do I need the social features with it? No, not really. Do I need it to be synced across my phone and my computer and maybe my tablet? Maybe. That'd be a feature worth exploring and looking into and making sure it can connect between different types of platforms and devices. So that would be a feature important to me, but I want to know what you guys think. What features make the browser you're using feel more than it is? I don't know. Might be an edge that we might not have considered before, but don't count on me. Nope. Mm-mm. Don't even count on me going back to Microsoft Edge. I will flip this table. I will. So, well, I told you guys I wasn't going to get into political news, and I'm not. But I just want to say that, apparently there's a bill being announced in the Senate, for the United States at least, to ban loot boxes and pay-to-win mechanics. Now, I'm one to have listened to many Angry Joe Show rants, and many Boogie rants, and many Game Grumps rants about pay-to-win mechanics and loot boxes, and as well as my own. But I guess Senator Josh Hawley today announced plans to introduce the Protecting Children from Abuse of Games Act, which would target the exploitation of children through pay-to-win and loot box monetization practices by the video game industry, according to a summary released by his office. As outlined, the bill would mirror the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act in applying to games targeted at those under the age of 18, and games with wider audiences whose developers knowingly allow minor players to engage in microtransactions. Under the bill, such games would not be allowed to have loot boxes defined here as microtransactions offering randomized or partially randomized rewards to players. Ooh, and the language there starts getting really specific and eerily mirrors what's happening in the UK and in other areas that have, well, maybe not the UK, England, not even England, but in Europe, with some countries considering or having put in place bills, effectively saying you can't have, if you're gonna sell a game, you can't have loot boxes or pay-to-win mechanics built into it. So, what do you guys think? I mean, it was only a matter of time before it hopped across the pond back over to here, and for the longest time there have been so many rants going on of saying, can these game developers figure out a smarter way to create a good quality game and not have to suck additional pennies out of players' pockets just for the sake of padding theirs? I mean, provide me with some value. I don't want pay to win. I don't want, okay, to some extent, loot boxes, but I know that the reason why I'm going for loot boxes here is for the aesthetics, the cosmetics, as it were. It's not going to give me any advantage in winning. All it really does is give me bragging points among my friends, and if I'm part of a community of gamers who happen to also play that game, I can sit there and I can say, yeah, I got this skin back in Season 1. It's super rare now. Well, that's why I'm wearing it, because I like this skin, and it goes on. They go, wow, you've been playing for a long time. That's really all it is. So, the bill summary also takes aim at so-called pay-to-win mechanics that manipulate a game's progression system to introduce players to spend money, or which alter the competitive balance between players of multiplayer games. The FTC and state attorneys general would be able to enforce the law. So, In a statement, Holly said that when a game is designed for kids, game developers shouldn't be allowed to monetize addiction, and when kids play games designed for adults, they should be walled off from compulsive microtransactions. Game developers who knowingly exploit children should face legal consequences. In a statement, the ESA noted that numerous countries, including Ireland, Germany, Sweden, Denmark, Australia, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom, determined that loot boxes do not constitute gambling. We look forward to sharing with the senator the tools and information the industry already provides that keep the control of the in-game spending in parents' hands. Parents already have the ability to limit or prohibit in-game purchases with easy-to-use parental controls. So, it's interesting. It goes on to explain a little bit more. I guess back in September of last year, Washington State joined with 15 foreign countries in a declaration expressing concern with the risk being posed by the blurring of lines between gambling and other forms of digital entertainment, such as video gaming, which can very easily lead to addictions and compulsory spending and throwing money on microtransactions that you really don't, and then racking up nice big fat credit card bills, and then going, what the heck did you buy all this stuff for? Well, I just buy it to look cool and pay to win. So, I don't know. I think this is finally starting to, I sure hope EA Games finally takes this thump over the noggin pretty good and actually drills back and goes, whoa, 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 guys, we're doing something wrong. Okay? Don't do that, to which Angry Joe will say, yeah, because why can't you just make a decent game in the first place? There you go. That's about it. All right, moving on to, well, an iPhone update that could change the way you text forever with a new swipe keyboard. Now, it might sound wacky, but this feature already exists on Android smartphones and is hugely popular. In fact, it's also possible to get this feature on your iPhone already by installing a custom keyboard, which this article then goes on to explain how to do. The new feature revealed by Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, a longtime Apple leaker, who reveals the details of an upcoming iPhone update. According to Gurman, the feature will be revealed at Apple's WWDC tech convention in early June. So, in a post, he wrote, the company is testing a new keyboard option that allows users to swipe across letters on the keyboard in one motion to type out words. This would be an alternative to tapping on the keys and is generally considered to be a faster way of typing. He didn't offer many more details, other than suggesting the feature would be included in iOS 13. So that's the big software update coming for iPhone and expecting it to roll out publicly in mid-September. So, however, it's likely that Apple fans will be able to access it ahead of time as part of the usual beta test, so it's entirely possible that you could be using Apple's new swipe-to-type feature in just a few weeks. So, sadly, Apple hasn't actually confirmed this feature exists, so don't get too excited just yet, but if you do want swipe-to-text right now, though, it's possible, and there is a video that goes along with it. So, interesting, although for me personally, I really don't mind taking the time opening up my phone and typing out a text message. I'm just glad that we're not to the stage where we only communicate via emojis, because if it was, man, I'd flip out. All right, moving on to some gadget news. Epson came out with a $500 smart glass that's literally powered by your phone. And here's the interesting thing about it. Just plug and play. How long have we been waiting for something like this? So smart glasses have been kicking around for more than half a decade now, so it's a bit jarring when a new model is released and they look, well, ugly. Google has already demonstrated that it's possible to build a pair without bottle-thick lenses and chunky frames, and yet the market's newest arrival, Epson's Moverio BT30C smart glasses, boast exactly that. And they have this really nice squished rectangular look to them too, so you can be like, I'm future boy. And people look at you like, what the heck? And then you like burn them with your laser eyes because you can do that now in the future. Aesthetics aside, though, Epson's latest offering comes with features that could help give smart glasses the nudge they need to take hold in the consumer market. Namely, at the moment, such devices are largely the sole domain of businesses. Moverio BT30C connect with an Android smartphone, a Windows PC over USB-C, a plug-and-play function that mitigates some of the hassle seen in previous iterations with custom controller boxes. Now, the glasses project up to three apps on three different screens against a transparent background and come with an OLED display for sharp, bright imagery. Glasses also come with a dark lens shade for movie theater experience when streaming videos. Of course, none of these features alone will have consumers lining up for a pair, but their reasonable price tag of $499 will certainly make them a little bit more enticing, given previous models hitting the market at $700. Now, it's not small change, but making smart glasses more affordable will certainly be a guiding principle in the way tech giants approach this going more mainstream. So, if you finally wanted tech and smart glasses specifically to figure out how to work better together, well, this might just be the start. Moving on to some more gadget news, Amazon's latest Blink security camera, get this, lasts 2 years on AA batteries. And we actually have an image that goes along with this, so if you're listening to the podcast of this episode, head on over to youtube.com/technewsgadget and you can watch today's show. Or you can just swipe around on the app, however you get more details, and tap that article link in your phone and it'll pop up a browser right there for you to look at. Now, it's now clear what the Blink team has been up to since Amazon acquired it in 2017, namely a much improved version of their core security camera. The newly unveiled Blink XT2 looks similar on the outside, but packs several upgrades that include a dramatic improvement to battery life. The outdoor-capable camera lasts for 2 years of motion-activated use on a pair of AA lithium batteries. You'll also get two-way talk to ward off intruders, and refined motion detections that lets you define microactivity zones to minimize the chance of false alerts. When recording video, Amazon says that this model will last twice as long as the previous one. The new Blink cam captures footage at an unspectacular 1080p, but it does talk to Alexa. Now, for many, the price might be the draw. The XT2 costs about 25% less than its predecessor, with a $90 price tag by itself, or $100 if you don't already have the mandatory sync module. It'll reach the US on May 22nd and Canada this summer. And when storage cost for videos is free, you don't really have to worry about reoccurring costs. As such, this may be a decent set it and forget it option for safeguarding your home. Now, there was an update posted, I guess, this afternoon. This post has been clarified to note that the XT2 has doubled the battery life specifically when recording video when compared to the previous XT. Not that it has double the battery life overall, but it's actually kind of interesting. It looks like a really small, simple security camera that you can stick outside and should be able to weather most elements and last for 2 years on AA lithium batteries. So, it's great. So, for all of you wanting to wonder, hey, do I got any security camera options? Yeah, there you go. Here's one. Test it out. Let me know what you think. And finally, in gaming news today, well, Destiny's 2 new exotic quest brings back one of the best guns from Destiny 1. And I'm actually a little bit excited about this because I've been playing Destiny since Destiny 1 and I really enjoy Destiny 2's story. But Destiny 2's latest update has added a new exotic quest whose reward is a reissue of one of the best guns from the first game, Outbreak Prime. It's a pulse rifle. Now, this new quest begins, like so many in Destiny do, with the hunt for a transponder. And, well, I hate sometimes looking for transponders, but this one, particularly if you're interested in getting it, is located on Titan in a hidden room at the end of the Bad Neighbor's heroic adventure. The transponder has 6 nodes, each with a different symbol that can only be unlocked by finding them out in the world. And I have a guide right here on Kotaku that goes right through the entire process. Once completed, the transponder grants access to a new mission called Zero Hour that takes place back in the old tower. So it's the reward at the end of all of this that has players really excited. Completing Zero Hour grants players a weapon called Outbreak Perfected, a callback to one of the best exotic pulse rifles from the first Destiny game. That gun was a reward for completing the Channeling the Corruption quest from September 2016 Rise of Iron expansion, which involved an alternate reality game, lots of math, and tons of players working together to try and solve it. It still remains as one of the series' most ridiculously complicated puzzles up to date. Now, the gun did live up to the work required to get to it, with a special perk that it would let it spawn non-tease to swarm enemies and deal extra damage. And I probably just named that wrong, but whatever. The puzzle to unlock the old tower mission isn't nearly as complicated, thankfully, but the mission itself is hardly a walk in the park, with fallen enemies sporting light levels of 690. That makes it strictly an endgame activity, so you need to have leveled up before you do the quest, which will prevent most people from jumping right into it. At the same time, it provides a compelling goal for those players who've already hit that level. In addition to Zero Hour having some interesting lore behind it, Outbreak Perfected, which brings back the Nanite perk, will likely be a powerful force in Destiny 2's Gambit mode. Also, the gun, I mean, come on, look at it. Look at this gun. Looks cooler than Evan, ever. Rounds per minute, 450, magazine, 36. Have a bunch of perks that go along with it, and mods that you can stack on top of it. Ooh. Outbreak. Awesome, awesome gun. And if you're like, I don't like Destiny, why don't you talk about news that I'm actually interested in? Well, great point. Let me know down in the comment section down below what games you want me to keep you up to date and current on, and, well, I'll be sure to report on it. Currently, I'm interested in a handful of games. Destiny's one of them. Fortnite's another one of them. League of Legends is another one of them. So, sorry, my bias showed through a little bit on that, but, and zombie games, depending on if it's interesting or not, story-wise and zombie AI-wise, but you probably already know. So, if you're interested in more game coverage on various different games, let me know down in the comments section. Alright, and with that, that wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. The Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. And if you enjoyed this episode, let us know by clicking that like button and leaving a comment. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor American. Remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.